Welcome back to the show. Man, is this show packed with vitamins and minerals today. Thank you to Mike Boddicker for an hour of power. Now we turn our lonely eyes to Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com. Matt, is it true that you complaining about no air conditioning in the practice facility led Clark Hunt to get an air conditioning unit for the facility out there?
I doubt it was me. Mm-hmm. I think Patrick Mahomes has a little bit more sway than I do.
Yeah, says who? Did you? I assume you read that article.
I have read it. Yes.
Willie Gay has a way with words, doesn't he? I'm thinking it could be very interesting to listen to Willie Gay, New Orleans Saint, moving forward. But what was your main takeaway from because we talked about this a little bit earlier. There were some interesting quotes from Willie Gay. There's Clark Hunt saying, hey, I didn't make any promises to nobody. And then you got Patrick Mahomes having to complain and ask for air conditioning in the practice facility. What do you take away from that after reading that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the he said, she said kind of aspect to it is probably the most notable to me. I mean, because I do get the impression that there wasn't necessarily like a quid pro quo, that it wasn't like Clark Hunt just walked into a players meeting and anything like this and said, hey, we're going to build you a new locker room and you're going to do all this. I think it was a little bit, you know, more vague. I mean, there was expectations of it, and, you know, there was some thoughts that was going to happen, and then just came again that game like a telephone. Because there's no doubt, I mean, that the players were expecting a lot more that was going to happen than just getting some new chairs. But I don't think it was ever explicit about what was going to happen, and setting expectations might just really be what's been kind of the problem, the miscommunication on some of these things. And some of the things left the players, you know, in kind of a bad spot. Because that's the weird thing is that, you know, it's hard to really judge because that, you know, saying that Clark Hunt's based on this score and his grade in the NFLPA is the worst owner in the league. I mean, I certainly don't get the sense that that's what anybody in that locker room really feels like. But were they ticked off about a few things? And are they? Yeah, I think they are. But I don't know if this is an indication that things are, you know, all better and moving forward or anything like that. But I guess there's at least an indication that Clark Hunt's listening and there's a few things that are going to happen.
How about this? Call me crazy. Upgrade the practice facility. Let's do it. And then this goes away. Just do it. Take care of the team that's winning you championships to the best of your ability. And make Patrick Mahomes happy. He doesn't need to be complaining about air conditioning or seats with chairs with backs and things like that, you know. That's all. This is my point of view. Matt Derrick, Nate, did you want to add to that at all? Or
no.
He said, let Mahomes sweat. Who cares?
Yeah.
But that's Nate Buchanan. So
that's how you, again. You know right. What? We don't want to pamper these guys.
That's exactly right.
Then you have a bunch of pampered players.
All right. Is everything official now with the Snead deal? Do the Chiefs have the salary cap space now?
Not technically, no.
Damn it! Matt, I thought it was official. When's it official?
Maybe today. We'll see. It's kind of weird that everything hasn't gone through and processed through. I mean, obviously, you know, between the time that these things get reported and break and get done, there can be some, you know, a time. This one's come out a little longer than I thought.
But he passed the physical, and they can sign it. So, I mean, it's happening. I mean, I'm trying to spend this money.
I know. It's weird. And so it's just this work apparently is just a paperwork issue. So that's like I said, I'm assuming it gets done today and officially hits the transaction wire. We'll see. But you got to wait at least a few more hours until you get the money to spend.
Okay. So let's spend that money anyway. We went through a list of different options that I had yesterday. And everyone, we had Mark Boberger in the studio, everyone agreed that the most obvious thing to do that's most likely is bring back Mike Dana because that fills a need, and he's a good player, and he fits, obviously. And that won't break the bank. So that is something. You've got the option to go after another veteran receiver. And then the big one is addressing left tackle. And of course, you could go out and sign one of the, you know, there's we went through this yesterday. Players with flaws, you know, David Bakhtiari, Mekhi Becton, you know, no one's perfect out there. You could draft a guy, but there could always be a trade. Who knows? You tell me. You're Brett Veach. You've got your shopping list. What's on it? What are you going to go out there and spend this money on?
Well, and that's, I think that's the probably one thing to note is just that, Chief, I mean, Brett Veach, he wants to be careful with his money. I mean, he doesn't want to just go out there and spend it all and then not have anything left when, you know, the rent's due next month. You know, when this all gets done, you know, according to like Spotrac and over the cap, they'll probably have about $26 to $27 million in cap. But you know what? Half that money is pretty much earmarked already. I mean, because one, you know, this time of year you're only counting top 51, so you got to count two more contracts. You got to count a practice squad. You got to count draft picks. You've got to count injured reserve. You know, just the money that a team wants and Brett Veach wants going into a season. So, you know, Chiefs probably, you know, can easily say, hey, $12 to $14 million of that money is taken. So that still gives you $12 to $14 million to put into the team. So, yeah, some things can get done. But I still don't get the sense that they really want to blow all that money in one place. And, yeah, I mean, I think Mike Vanna makes absolute ton of sense to get done sooner than later. We'll see if that happens. I mean, you know, one of the things that Brett Veach told us when we talked to him at the Combine, you know, was one of their, you know, strategies for free agency was going to be after, you know, the first couple of waves were done was just sitting back and waiting to see what happens. And it might even be waiting until after the draft, you know, to see what prices are out there, you know, not only for their own free agents, but for some others. I mean, I think if Mike Vanna comes to them and says, hey, I'm ready, here's my price, this is, you know, the best I can get from anywhere else, and this is what I want, and if it's in the Chiefs ballpark, I think they'll bring him back. You know, a tackle, I mean, I still don't think it's anything that they're going to go out and spend a ton of money on a free agent, like Bakhtiari, because I think the injury concerns are a big issue there. But could Donovan Smith be back? You know, and some, is there someone else that's just a competitive piece? I think those are more likely scenarios too.
Would you jack around with Becton at all because he fits the profile that Veach likes of a former first round pick with pedigree, tremendous size? There's talent there. Would you think that would be a gamble worth taking to see if Andy Heck could turn him into at least some of the player he was supposed to be?
I mean, that would, to me, have to be a true one-year prove-it deal. I mean, it couldn't be something significant. I mean, even like $7 million and some bonus money, I mean, and some incentives would be too much for me. I mean, I think it would need to be more like $3 million. But I do. I mean, I do think that it would be at least a flyer worth taking. Certainly seemed like coaching and just a good environment might have been his issue. And putting him in a place like Kansas City might absolutely get the best out of him. There's obviously a ton of physical ability and talent there. So, yeah, if you can tap into it, take a shot on it. But it's not one that you want to take a big risk on.
Matt Derrick from Chiefs Digest is on the show. Matt, Nate wants to know if the new kickoff rule means Kadarius Toney has a spot on this team.
I'm good.
You know, this is not the first time in the last 24 hours I've been asked that question.
Well, Nate asked the good questions.
I'm good.
It's a great question. What? I mean, I think this, these new rules actually, I think, do favor a guy like Kadarius Toney. Talking with my guy Nick Jacobs last night, and you know, from the 41 at the Mike podcast, that soft plug there. You know, and he points out, hey, this is definitely going to favor returners that can, you know, get up to speed very quickly. You know, and Toney is exactly one of those kind of guys. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's probably absolutely perfect piece for a return like that and that kind of scenario. So maybe this would be his opportunity to shine. The question's going to be, is he healthy enough? I mean, I think if he's healthy, he'll get the chance, but it's just going to be up to him, and it's going to be up to whether or not he's going to be available.
Come on, man. The answer's no, right?
No, I think the answer might be yes, sir.
I mean, I'm still like,
I wish you could see Nate's face right now.
They're going to bring this guy back.
I'm still under the philosophy that with that guaranteed money, they're going to give him every chance to prove himself.
I'm good.
I mean, it's not a guarantee he's going to make the week one roster, but I think they're going to give him every opportunity and maybe then some.
I'm good.
I'm flabbergasted.
No, you're not.
I'm flabbergasted.
New kickoff rules.
How many kick returns does this guy have for a touchdown? One?
Just give him a chance now.
And that was a punt, right? His biggest play with the Chief was a punt. Did he have a good kick return? Has he had one?
Because there's kickoffs weren't relevant. Now they are.
Wasn't this format, Nate?
Tell him. Matt, tell him.
What's he guaranteed next year? I don't even know what it is.
What's he guaranteed this?
I'm
2.85, I think.
Yeah.
They're going to keep him around.
Maybe.
Because he's owed $2.5 million.
Now, because of your reaction, I want them to keep him around as a return specialist.
I mean, I'll say this. You know, his reputation in the building is not the same as it is outside the building. And, and they still think a lot of him. They still think there's something left. I mean,
the guy that said he wasn't hurt at the end of the year, but they kept saying he was hurt?
If they were done with him, he'd already be gone.
Right. Okay.
Well, maybe it's because they can't find a replacement for that cheap. I mean...
I'd rather be Mecole Hardman as a return specialist and as a speed guy. But, I mean, so let me ask you this. Do you think that Kadarius Toney and Sky Moore are both on this team next year? Do you think it's one or the other? Or do you think they'll have room for both?
That's a great question. And, I think at some point it's going to be a numbers issue about, how many guys you can keep. I mean, we expect them to, and I certainly expect them to bring back, or at least add another veteran player to the roster, whether that's Mecole Hardman, whether that's somebody from outside. I expect them to do that. I expect them to probably take a draft pick, too. So you add that, so suddenly it gets pretty difficult to add in all the numbers. I mean, you still have Justin Watson around. You've got Rashee Rice, obviously. It becomes a numbers game. So I don't know if I'm convinced that both of them will be around, but I think that they're going to give both of them every single chance they've got to make this roster.
That's got to happen now, I think, just for Nate's
okay, sanity. Whatever. In Veach, I trust.
Is that right?
There you go.
I'm stunned. I'm stunned by the whole idea.
This is how it is. So with Snead officially gone, and we've talked about the young corners, and we know that guys like Williams and Watson are going to get their chance. Nick Jones, we've talked about Naz Johnson coming back. Shamari Connor, playing more slot corner. Do you think that they need to address cornerback at all with a veteran free agent? I know a lot of people throw out Xavien Howard out there. I don't know how realistic that is. Do you think they need to add a veteran corner? Or do you think they'll draft one maybe in the fourth or fifth round? Or do you think there's enough bodies, they're happy with what they have, to where they don't need to address it? It's not really a priority.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if for no other reason than, Brett Veach's philosophy is definitely that of, you can never have enough long, lean guys who can cover. So it wouldn't surprise me. If it was an expensive addition, it would surprise me just because of what you said. I mean, that is one of the strengths of this coaching staff and this front office has been an ability to identify talent and then to develop it. So, you have a ton of depth already there right now that you could imagine building a roster and feeling pretty good about your cornerback spot. I mean, McDuffie, Williams, Watson, Nazi Johnson coming back. Then you add in Nick Jones from last year. I mean, we haven't even talked about, drafting a guy like Echo Boydo, signing a guy like him that was undrafted and turning him into somebody that you feel like can be a player. They did the same thing with Javaris Ward. And they've got Keith Taylor around, too, who is a guy that they like and think can be a depth piece. So, I think they're okay there. And once again, why don't you go ahead and trust your process? I mean, absolutely. If there's a corner that you like, get them in the draft. You might want to make sure that they don't, you know, slip through and they can't get away from you in the free agency process afterwards. Go for it. But it would not surprise me if they spent a day two or a day three, probably a day three pick on a corner or undrafted. But I think that's where they're going to just continue to put their resources, because I don't see, you know, a day one or a day two corner pick being an absolute desperate need for this team.
Let me go through the scenario with you we talked about yesterday. We're looking at the latest mock draft at The Athletic, and the way it played out, there were several players that would be enticing for the Chiefs at 32 if it played out this way. Ladd McConkey, Georgia wide receiver, available. Xavier Worthy was available. They had him taking a left tackle. Damn it, it's escaping me who it was. The kid from Arizona was available because they had taken him.
That will not be who the Chiefs take, but at least not as a tackle.
Well, good. You can tell us why on that too. And then Kool-Aid McKinstry. I think it's just interesting because you saw so many mock drafts early on that had him going in the top 20, and if he fell, who knows? Where are you leaning at based on what the team is right now as far as position? And if those players are, you know, available, if there's a left tackle that they like, if there's a kid like, I want Ladd McConkey. I just think he'd be such a great fit for this offense. If a high-end corner like McKinstry fell, which way would you lean? And tell us why they're not taking a kid from Arizona.
I think Morgan, the kid from Arizona. Too short of arms. His arms are like 32 and 7'8".
That's what they tell me.
The Chiefs are one of those teams that absolutely, like, arm length is an absolute factor for them at the tackle position. You got, your arms aren't 34 inches or more, chances of them taking you, you got Jordan Morgan. Chances of them wanting you are pretty slim. Now, if you're drafting him with the intention of making him a guard, sign me up, just not in the first round. But that could absolutely be a prospect, you know. But, the arm length for me, yeah, that's not enough. But
Matt Derrick says that they will make a fart noise instead of drafting him.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I said this last night my live stream that I don't want to sometimes sound like, you know, I'm just a Brett Beach an apologist who will just all of a sudden agree with whatever he does, because like Xavier Worthy is one of those players that really worries me because he is just so thin that, you know, you just wonder if he's got the ability to hold up in an NFL season and to take hits and to get back up consistently, because he's going to get hit a lot more by a lot bigger guys than he has in the past. And, I mean, he's like 171 pounds. And he's skinny as a rail. So I've got questions about that. But if Chiefs were to take him, my concerns would go away, because I know that at least when it comes to that kind of thing, they've got a pretty good track record of, you know, doing their homework and knowing about whether they can put, you know, muscle on a player, whether they can put some pounds on to keep the athleticism. And, you know, and because, hey, you know, there were some concerns about that with Tyreek. Not as many, because Tyreek was always a lot thicker than Xavier Worthy is. But, you know, the fact that it's one of those things where if, you know, I may have concerns about a player, but if the Chiefs take them, it'll be like, wait a minute, okay, maybe Brett Veach and his staff are saying something I'm not, because this is an area where they usually excel. But Kool-Aid, potential there. I mean, I still think that right now the plurality of choices is probably going to be wide receiver.
Ladd McConkey.
Just because of the depth of the position. I mean, there's probably 7 or 8 players that could go in the first round. And if that's the case and there's going to be that many receivers, and they are that good. I mean, you know, there's definitely at the end of the round, hey, there's probably only 3 or 4 receivers that you give a true first round grade to, but then there's a bunch that you'd have in that next tier, and getting them at 32, I'd be an okay pick.
So give me Ladd McConkey, but I'm going to tell you this, and I don't believe he'll be there, right? And I'm not saying this just because he went to Missouri.
Uh-huh.
But I'm telling you, if Darius Robinson somehow falls, I don't think they'll pass on him, because he is exactly the kind of defensive lineman Andy Reid loves and Steve Spagnuolo loves. He could play defensive tackle. And let's be, they brought back They brought the whole band stayed together, right? All the defensive tackles, everything else. There's still a need there alongside Chris Jones. And there's the versatility that he shows is exactly the kind of player they like. I don't think he'll be there, but I know everyone's focused on wide receiver. But if Darius Robinson fell, I wouldn't be shocked if they took him.
Yeah, I completely co-sign on all of that. I mean, you're right. He checks all the boxes that Joe Colan and Steve Spagnuolo wanted as defensive linemen. Just the size, the flexibility, the versatility, the motor. He ticks all the boxes, absolutely, for sure. And I'm actually somewhat optimistic that if Brett Veach wants to move up, that he's going to have a better chance this year than maybe he would have last year. The third round pick from Tennessee helps. That absolutely gives you some you know, currency to move up. And I haven't talked to anybody yet that feels like that third round pick from Tennessee for L'Jarius Sneed will be used by the Chiefs. I mean, everybody I've talked to feels like, yeah, that pick is gone this year.
Right.
I mean, they're moving that thing to move around the board. But you've got a stretch in the draft, the first round from 22 to 27, a stretch of six picks that are all NFC teams. And I think there absolutely is legitimate resistance in the AFC from wanting the trade with the Chiefs, because you're just, you know, you don't want to necessarily make the bully on the street better and stronger. And I think there was some evidence of that last year. There were some NFC teams that didn't want to trade with the Chiefs just simply because they were afraid the Chiefs were going to take their guy. But I think there's a chance. I mean, and there's all some teams in that area that, because it's what, Philadelphia, Minnesota, Dallas, Green Bay, Tampa Bay, and Arizona are in that stretch. I think those are all teams the Chiefs can work with. So if a guy like Darius Robinson falls into the, you know, mid-20s, I think there's a bunch of teams that Brett Veach would probably be calling.
Hey, Big Red loves taking defensive linemen. I mean, all the way back to his time in Philadelphia. So I think it's not far-fetched what you guys are saying. Do you think they'd be more likely to trade up with this pick or trade down with this pick to accumulate more picks?
It's Veach, so I say up.
I think getting the Sneed deal done makes up more likely. But again, that's going to come down to Brett Veach has usually what he'll sell us is they got like 15 to 20 players that they've got a first round grade on.
Yeah, how's the board fall?
If one of them is available and, you know, once you get to 20, 21, 22, he will absolutely be interested in trying to go get one of them. If none of the players that they want are there, then he'll consider moving back. So question is just, again, I mean, you know, whether you can find the buyer. The last couple of times they've had the last pick in the first round, they haven't been able to find a partner when they wanted to move back. Last year, they definitely wanted to move up, but couldn't find a partner, and couldn't find a partner to move back. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be just depend on how the board falls. But the player that they want is available. They've got the currency now to go get him.
I like the way you talk. That's exactly right. Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com. Matt, thank you so much for the time, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen. Take care, my friends.
It is a pleasure to talk to Matt Derrick. That's good information right there. ChiefsDigest.com for more. What if I told you that you could have DJ Chark, but you must also have Kadarius Toney? Will you agree to that?
I don't know.
Agree to it.
I don't know that I want DJ Chark that bad.
Well, boy.
I just don't get it. I just don't get it. No, I don't get it.
It's the new rules. Dave Tobe, what if Dave Tobe wants him?
Then I guess Dave Tobe gets what Dave Tobe wants.
You're damn right. Are you a numbers thing
right now, Nate? I mean, it's a numbers thing.
What numbers? What are we talking about?
I mean, they have a roster. I mean, he's under contract.
Right.
You don't want him under contract anymore, do you?
I mean, so what, they take the $2.8 million hit to let him go?
And then you have to replace him, too. I mean, it's just like, would you rather have him at the bottom of your roster, not take the hit? And
literally had this guy on the bench down the stretch and in the playoffs when he said he wasn't
even hurt. Nate's telling you he'd rather not have him on the roster.
I literally think he'll be on the bench again.
Like, they're just going to
tell everybody? They use him as a return specialist?
I think they give him some chances, too, but I think he'll end up having the exact same
role. Here's the deal. They're not going to just bury him all season long.
No, you're hurt.
If he's on the team.
I feel good. Nope, you're
don't
hurt.
Roll him out there as a return guy. Of course they will.
I can see him doing it. He's got zero kick returns in his NFL career.
Well, time to change that.
I realize they don't have many kick returns these days, but.
Well, see, now they will. So you got to look ahead. You see how the guy I wanted, you guys said was too old, Cordarrelle Patterson.
I didn't say
how
that.
Long was he?
I didn't say
after
that.
They passed that rule, how long did it take for someone to sign him?
A day.
An hour. New kickoff rule passes, Pittsburgh. Sign. Here we go. Thank you. Yep. That's just because so now they like there's a group of players that weren't as attractive that all of a sudden are attractive again. And guess what? Mecole Hardman should be one of them.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a factor once again.
I'd rather have Hardman than Tony.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I'd love to have him back there and say, you know what? You're a return guy. Because guess what? Now a return specialist means something again.
Right. I just have a feeling that Tony and Sky Moore are both going
to
be on this
team. And I'm not campaigning for Kadarius Tony to be it, but
just trying to make
it means something again.
Yeah. You're just being rational.
But I will tell you this. Got hurt in training camp. One of the best return specialists in all of college football the previous year, that free agent, the Chiefs, I remember, Nico Remigio. Mm-hmm. He's still on the roster. Don't sleep on him because he was one of the most dynamic return men in college football. And he's had a year in the program, so not with Petro. I'm talking about with the Chiefs. Although being with Petro for a year
that would
might help you as a return man. I don't know. We'll take a break back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the show. Let's talk baseball. I don't know if you saw this day, but opening day's tomorrow. So you need to start figuring things out. Right now, we're going to talk to our friend Scott Sharp, Senior Vice President and Assistant GM of the Royals. Scott, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing very well. So I want to make sure this is correct. So Jake informed you that we were running a little bit late because it's Mike Boddicker's fault. And so we'll throw the blame at him. But you told Jake, you're from Baltimore, you attended a playoff game that Mike Boddicker was the starting pitcher. Is that true?
Yeah, and again, it was 1983, so memory might be slightly foggy, but I believe it was game two of the American League Championship Series against the White Sox. The Orioles won that game, went on to win the American League and then the World Series. But that was the only playoff game I was ever at until the 14 wild card game.
Wow. I mean, what a memory. But that was a great, great playoff game to go to. Yeah, game two, the Orioles won 4-0. Mike Boddicker was the winning pitcher. Floyd Bannister, the loser for the White Sox. Boddicker, 9 innings, 5 hits, no runs, 3 walks, 14 strikeouts. Unbelievable.
I was sitting in the upper deck of Memorial Stadium. I remember that.
Who was your favorite Oriole back in the day?
There were many of them. I mean, I grew up through a variety of different eras. Obviously, big Cal Ripken fan. I wore his number in Little League. Loved Eddie Murray, Rick Dempsey. I mean, just a variety of them. I mean, huge baseball fan growing up, and the Orioles, in those days were really good through the 70s and early 80s.
Wow, that's awesome. And now, of course, your job with the Royals, hopefully we're going to see some more playoff games in the future. There's a lot of excitement. When we talked about some of the moves that the Royals made. And one thing I wanted to ask you about that has developed since we last spoke, the decision on the fifth starter will be Alec Marsh. And so for people that aren't quite familiar, I know that he's an arm that you guys have liked for a while, and he's an exciting, still call him a prospect. But Alec Marsh, tell us how he ended up as the fifth starter, maybe what his upside is and what you like about him.
Well, I think you touched on a lot of it. You would consider him still a prospect. Alec was up last year. You saw a lot of really good qualities to his pitches. He's got power to his fastball. He's got a variety of breaking balls. He's continuing to develop as a starter. And he came into spring training with just a mission. I think, I really believe that in his mind he knew he had a shot to win a spot in the rotation, even with the additions of, you know, Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha. And he came in and he did exactly that. I mean, he just from day one, he really dominated spring training. And you don't completely like to evaluate spring training as it relates to, you know, how you put the team together, but it was very obvious that he had pitched his way into the rotation. And it was not an easy decision when you look at what Daniel Lynch did in spring training as well. And obviously Jordan Lyles has been a major league starter for a long time. It was not an easy decision, but Alec really put himself in that position to win that job.
So when you mentioned that it's tricky to evaluate guys in spring training, the numbers don't correlate. Like if a guy has a great ERA in spring training, doesn't mean it's going to translate to the regular season. Flip side, a guy has bad ERA in spring training, it doesn't necessarily translate. So what type of things, I know production does matter, but what other types of things are you looking for with a guy like Alec Marsh? Is it the development of his stuff? Is it his approach? Is it his mindset? Like, what are you seeing from him? Because you mentioned that he was on a mission when he got to spring training.
Well, like you said, I mean, spring training is really tricky because you got a variety of players in different stages of what they're trying to accomplish. I mean, you got veteran guys who might just be working on a particular pitch.
Yeah.
That, you know, they may throw a changeup 50% of the time, regardless of what's going on in the game. And again, you would never see that during the regular season. And then, you know, then the lineups you're facing are so varied with the number of minor league players that are playing in those games. Especially in the back half of the games, you don't want to evaluate the performance. You do need to evaluate the stuff. You do need to evaluate, like, the level of condition, the level of readiness that a particular player might be in. And, again, the younger guys, you know, in terms of their career, you do have to, I guess, quote-unquote, evaluate a little bit more. The veteran guys, I mean, you're letting their track record dictate more of, you know, how they're going to be used in the regular season upcoming.
We're speaking with Scott Sharp on the topic of the rotation. I wanted to talk a little bit about Brady Singer and just the idea that, you know, hey, Cole Reagans is the opening day starter. And so people look at him as a guy that could hopefully turn into a consistent number one. And then you guys sign veterans that have been successful like Lugo and Wacha. And right or wrong, you know, since Brady Singer was taken in the first round, fans and expectations point to me, you know, he's got to be a number one. He's got to be an ace. And I know every pitcher, every player deals with that differently. Do you think that there's a chance that now maybe he could just be Brady Singer and he's got veterans in there that maybe take some pressure off of him, and there's, you know, and Cole Reagans is the guy that's going to go out there and be opening day starter. Maybe this, you know, we might see the best out of Brady Singer because I got really high expectations for him this year, and he could just go out there and pitch and be himself.
I believe that you'll see Brady Singer more like 22 than 23. Only because I think the start of last year was really tricky with Brady, with the WBC, with the lack of innings pitched in spring training, trying to catch up during the season. Look, I don't think it's going to hurt any of our young pitchers to watch how Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha go about their business. Those guys are tremendous professionals at what they do. I do. So, you know, being around Brady for the number of years that I've been around Brady, he's extremely competitive. He's extremely diligent in his work and wanting to be very good. I don't think Brady necessarily needs other people around him to sort of, you know, all ships, you know, rising tide lifts all ships. I don't think Brady necessarily needs that, but I don't think it's going to hurt Brady to have those type of guys to be able to bounce those things off of. I mean, those guys have had varying degrees of expectations on them throughout their career. He can bounce, you know, those types of thoughts and ideas off of them along with the pitching concepts. So I just think having varying degrees of pitchers and players where they are in their career certainly will help Brady.
Scott, when you say that, reminding us about the start of last year with Singer, I have a lot of mixed emotions about that because I was lucky enough to get to go down to the World Baseball Classic in Miami. I was down there for work, and I got to go see the U.S. play against Venezuela. And Salvi played for Venezuela, had a huge double in the game, and it was one of the best it literally might have been the best baseball atmosphere I've ever been in, maybe outside of going to those playoff games that the Royals played in. I had so much fun. I thought it was this awesome event. On the flip side, especially when you hear people say that spring training is maybe more important for pitchers than it is for hitters so that they can get their innings built up and get ready for the season, it really sucks to have a guy like Singer who's in the, you know, his career's on the upward trajectory, you're counting on him, and his whole season gets thrown off because he never gets to have that real spring training. I don't know what the right answer is to that. What are your thoughts on the World Baseball Classic, what it does for the game, but what it costs teams like yourselves when a guy like Brady goes there and doesn't even really get to pitch much?
Yeah, I think you touched on a lot of the factors. I mean, the environment you can't replicate, right? Like, and I think that is a really good thing. I mean, again, you're putting players in a position where they can feel a playoff atmosphere. So then when they do get to the playoffs, they understand what that's like. They're less intimidated, less nervous, whatever it may be. I think that element is really good. It's really difficult to ask a player to not play for his country, to not represent his country. How often do you get to wear Venezuela or Dominican or USA on your jersey throughout your career and essentially play with the greatest players that your country has produced, you know, in the given era? It's hard to say no for a player to do that. You know, we struggle with it, but at the same time, you know, there is a developmental part of it that, you know, it always makes you cringe, whether it's injury, whether it's, you know, in both Bobby and Brady's case, they just weren't used the way that the team was going to use them. And it made it difficult to get those guys back in the swing of things to start the season. So essentially, they were using, you know, no fault of their own, clearly, but they had to use almost April as their spring training to get the requisite number of innings and at bats to actually make the thing work. And that's really tricky for a player to do. I don't know if there's a right answer because, you know, it has certainly spread the popularity of the game, I believe. As you said, you know, the atmosphere is electric, and you would not want to take that away from the players or the game.
Scott Sharp is our guest. We're talking about the Royals. Opening day is tomorrow. All right, Scott, it's kind of just a general question about the team itself. You know, we mentioned this, the teams in 14 and 15 that were so successful that ended up winning the championship. Man, they had an unmistakable identity, right? They were going to play great defense, tremendous athletes out in the field, put the ball in play, wreak havoc on the base paths. And if the Royals had a lead in the fifth or sixth inning, that game was over because of the best bullpen in the business. And so it was, everyone knew what that team was over those 2 years. Now that it seems like this team has come together with the young players, you know, getting a foothold on the team and bringing in the veterans to compliment them with all the moves you made in the offseason. Now, you know, Matt Quatrero has a full complement of weapons, right? And I don't know if it's fair to judge him or try to figure out what type of manager he is based on last year, because last year was so much about evaluation. So if somebody asks you, what's the identity of this team, or what do you want the identity of this team to be? What style of baseball does Matt Quatrero want to play? You know, he was with Cleveland, with Tampa, so that gives us some type of indicator. But if fans are wondering that, what is this? If things go well, how does this Royals team look this season?
Well, I think obviously it depends on, you know, a couple factors, right? But the identity is one. The youth, I think, is our identity, and again, you inherently Kansas City, like we make comparisons to 14 and 15. I think you saw a lot of youth there, and then we brought in veteran starters. I think the way that Matt really wants to use this team is he wants to have balance. He wants to have some power in the lineup. He wants to extend the lineup with at-bats, which is why we went out and signed, you know, Adam Frazier and Renfro, and knowing that Vinny's coming back. We want a really balanced offense. You know, we continue to covet defense. We covet the flexibility of players, that they're not locked into one position. He wants to utilize all 26 players on the roster because he feels like over 162 games, that's how you survive, that's how you thrive, and that's how you're the freshest when you're getting into late August, September, and then obviously, you know, guiding towards like an October run, is you need your best players as fresh as possible. And the best way to do that is to have a really balanced, solid 26-man roster, along with the players that are on the backside of the roster that are in AAA currently to start. They have to be able to impact the major league team throughout the season to keep everybody operating at really the maximum level the longest.
Yeah, position versatility and flexibility, I know, is very important. You know, one guy I wanted to ask you about that didn't make the team was Nick Prado, but he at least made the decision difficult, I would assume. He put up good numbers, and again, Nate was going to throw something at me if I bring up spring training stats. So I'll say he also showed a good approach.
There you go.
I'm sure you guys are happy with what he showed with his approach and how he went about his business in spring. And so when you look at him, you guys have to be thrilled that he did that. And now he gets to go down and play every day, and hopefully if there's an opening, he can come up and continue to progress. But maybe what's his path? Because you talk about versatility. He has played some outfield before. Clearly, he can play first base and DH. But maybe tell me a little bit about Prado and what you guys felt about his spring and maybe where his future is.
Sure. Well, his spring was phenomenal. And Nick came in, you know, much like Alec. I mean, he came in to win a job. He was very focused, you know, and he knew what the task was. I think if you'd ask Nick, he probably knew that it might not be easy to win a position. Obviously, you got Vinny coming back, and we feel good about Vinny. Really, quite honestly, I think it was a really tough decision. It went down obviously to the end of spring training. We were really trying to figure out the balance of the left-right lineup setup, and you know, we just felt like with Nick on the team, if he were to be on the team along with Adam Frazier and Vinny and MJ, the left-handed at bats for him are tricky with the other left-handed bats in the lineup that we have. So we just felt like, look, from a playing time standpoint, let's get him to AAA. Let's continue to you know, have him on the path that he was in spring training with some of the swing changes he made. Obviously, you know, he was dealing with some injury stuff last year towards the end of the year. He's back healthy, feels really good about that. We were very intentional to not have him in the outfield in spring training, just to make sure from a health standpoint he was in a good spot. I think once he gets to AAA, we will start introducing some more outfield play, again, to keep the versatility and the flexibility there. And I would expect that Nick is in the big leagues. You know, I don't know the exact timetable, but he'll definitely, you know, impact his team at some point during the year. You know, he handled not making the team as well as, you know, a guy can handle it. It's tough. You know, these guys are extremely competitive. They want to make the club. You know, he certainly felt like he deserved to make it, but he knows it's a long season. He knows opening day, although is extremely special for a player, and you don't want to take that away from him. It is a snapshot in time. There's 162 games, 186 days in the season. He's going to be up here. He's going to impact the team, and he's going down there to prove that he belongs here.
So finally, it is here, opening day. What do you have a specific memory as a kid that stands out from opening day, or just your favorite thing in general about opening day?
Well, my mom would always take me out of school, so I didn't have to go to school opening day. So we'd always try to go to as many Oriole games as we could. You feel extremely fortunate to be able to work in the game, to show up to a stadium on opening day with the excitement, obviously with the fans in Kansas City, the amount of enthusiasm that they have for this team, not just this year, but throughout the years. It's just a special time. And quite honestly, I love being in surprise for spring training. And, that's a really, it's one of my favorite times of the year. But after 6 weeks, you're ready to get ready to play a game that counts and means something, and we're ready to do that. And that's what opening day means to me.
Scott, thank you so much for the time. Good luck this season. We look forward to talking to you on a regular basis and watching this team develop as the summer comes on. And again, thank you so much for spending some time with us talking baseball.
Absolutely. Steve and Nate, thanks always.
That is a Scott Sharp. That's awesome. Opening day tomorrow. Very excited about this team. Let's go.
Should be a good day for it, too, man. Starting to warm up. It was a hard freeze last night.
And back off Cole Reagans, please, Jake, with your opening day. Let him live. Let him spread his wings without the
put down?
What was it?
I got him at plus 900 for the Cy Young. I mean, the number was dropping.
Plus 900?
Yeah, it was plus 1,800 about 2 months ago.
Oh,
what? Right, I messed up, but I saw that plus 900. Yeah. I was like,
yeah. Catch a falling star. There you go.
My buddy got it at plus 1,800.
Ooh.
Right. Right.
What's Bobby Witt Jr. MVP?
Try to find that out for you.
If we're going to talk about stuff, if we're going to kick around the old ball in the backyard, what do we got here?
Hmm.
Bobby Witt Jr. MVP. What is it? Guess what it is, Nate?
Plus 800.
Ridiculous.
Too high or too low?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying, ridiculous.
I'm not, I don't know my odds that well.
What'd he guess?
Is it?
Plus 800.
Is it?
It's too low, Nate.
12.
Almost.
13.
You got it. Plus 1,300.
Sounds like some value.
I mean, he's the sixth highest guy.
Who's that?
Aaron Judge is plus 550. Julio Rodriguez is plus 600. Juan Soto's plus 600. Yordan Alvarez plus 800. Nope. Corey Seager plus 1,000. Bobby Witt Jr. 1,300.
That's worth something. All right, let me investigate. Thank you. Back after this on WHB.